The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The United States is bringing a case based on the persecution of a journalist for his political opinions. Now, these were the words of Stella Assange as she spoke to reporters outside the UK High Court last week, following the ruling that her husband, the WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, could be allowed to launch a new appeal against being sent to the US. The High Court stated that the US must assure Mr. Assange that he has freedom of speech protections and will not receive the death penalty before he is to be extradited. We're joined now by Stella Assange, wife of Julian Assange. Good morning, Stella.
Good morning.
How do you regard what happened in court last week? Is it a major or minor victory?
It's very difficult to read it as a victory in the sense that, yes, the court recognizes that there's a very good chance Julian would win an appeal on 3 points. But rather than allow this appeal to go forward, it has invited the United States to modify its arguments so that the United States can have a better chance to extradite him.
Now, the arguments are whether or not he would have freedom of speech as a foreigner under the American Constitution. That's number one. And secondly, they would be asked to assure that Julian would not receive a death penalty in the United States, but he's not charged with any charge that would bring about a death penalty.
Yes, it's a particularity of the US justice system that once there is a conviction, or even before a conviction, once he's on US soil, but certainly after conviction, at the sentencing stage, the prosecution can bring in uncharged conduct or charge the conduct that's in the indictment differently under a different part of the statute that carries a death penalty. So that portion of the decision wants to prevent the United States from acting in that way, because it is possible under their system.
When the court looks for assurances, what exactly does an assurance from the United States mean?
Well, it's the reality is that it's really a political fix. There is a legal problem that can't be addressed. The U.S. had 2 days to try to answer the questions from the judges. The judges made pointed questions about these issues, these arguments, and the U.S. Legal counsel wasn't allowed, able to satisfy the judges. And so the judges have instead gone to the U.S. executive and said, well, can you give us a promise? But of course, these promises, so-called assurances, are unenforceable by the U.K. once Julian is on U.S. soil, and the U.S. is simply not a reliable party in this case. We know from its previous conduct that it has acted in bad faith in relation to Julian, that there were plans to assassinate him even under the previous administration.
Now, that question of the previous administration, it could well be the next administration. Mike Pompidou famously referred to Julian as a hoodlum. So Donald Trump would have no affection for Julian's case either. So do you believe that in the way that Donald Trump reneged on the Iran nuclear deal and indeed the Paris Accords, that no matter what the Biden administration said, Trump could simply reverse it?
Well, precisely. And we see all over the world just how the international legal order is crumbling before our eyes. Take, for example, the U.S.-UK extradition treaty. That's a treaty between two countries, the U.S. and the U.K., which they're both violating with Julian's extradition, where there is political will to do something to the detriment of an individual, in this case Julian, then they'll just go ahead and do it. And then, you know, they can say, well, take it up in the courts in a few years' time. By that time, the harm has already been done. So Julian is not protected by any assurances given by the United States. Amnesty International has done a lot of work on U.S. assurances and diplomatic assurances in general. And they're basically a get out clause when there is something that is politically expedient for the courts to say, well, let's seek assurances or rely on assurances, and then we'll just look the other way.
To what extent would a trial of Julian in the United States be what amounts to a show trial? In other words, they've pursued him for so long, and we all remember his time in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. They pursued him for so long that they now have to try him, even if a lot of the things of which they believe he's guilty have become irrelevancies.
Well, I think the purpose isn't just to put him on trial, but to parade him as a political prisoner, essentially, to show him off as, if you embarrass the powers that be, this is what will happen to you, as a deterrent for other courageous journalists, publishers, and also whistleblowers that want to expose wrongdoing that they shouldn't because they will be hounded. So the trial, I think, is just one aspect. But of course, the trial would be under for charges under the Espionage Act. It's the first time that a publisher is charged under the Espionage Act. The act itself, which has existed for more than 100 years, has never been used in a journalistic context as far as a publisher is concerned ever before. And so he has no prospect of a fair trial. He can't invoke a public interest defense because there is no such defense. And of course, as you've also mentioned, they're saying because he's an Australian citizen, he's not American, he doesn't have First Amendment rights. That's what the prosecutors have already argued in court. And the British courts now are seeking an assurance that the nationality issue be addressed by the US government.
Now, if those assurances are forthcoming, however you might doubt their applicability under a new administration, what would happen then? Would Julian be immediately extradited to the United States, or is there any further court of appeal?
Well, the UK courts, if they are satisfied, if the judges are satisfied that the assurances are sufficient, then they will waive through the extradition. And if that is the case and there's no further appeal possible in the British courts, however, Julian will then seek the European Court of Human Rights to intervene, both to look at the merits of the case. It would be Assange versus UK in that case, but also to seek to put a stop to the extradition while the European Court of Human Rights looks at the case as a whole. So that's no guarantee. It's not an automatic right. The European Court of Human Rights would have to intervene and see that this is an extraordinary case where there's irreparable harm, which is he's at immediate risk of suffering if he's extradited. We say that he's at risk of death if he's extradited as well. So I think the European Court of Human Rights will take this case very seriously and that they will grant an injunction on the UK extraditing him, but it's not a guarantee.
Would he therefore, pending that case, were it to be taken up by the European Court of Human Rights, would he remain in a British jail pending that process, which could be years in the making?
Well, that's right. And he's already been in prison for almost 5 years. It will be 5 years next week on the 11th of April. And the whole time he's been in this high security prison, not serving any sentence, without conviction, and years for years to come, unless the British judges say that he can get bail. And until now, he has been denied bail.
I presume his time in the Ecuadorian embassy, during which time you two started a family, would be a reason for them maybe not to grant bail, lest there be another diplomatic haven that he would seek.
Well, it's indefinite detention, and this indefinite detention is a form of torture. There is a lot of jurisprudence about this in the European Court of Human Rights. Keeping a person without conviction in a prison for over 5 years is also completely extraordinary, and there's also jurisprudence to determine that this is, yeah, this I mean, is not the, normal.
There's that old the old legal adage that justice delayed is justice denied. You know, you're entitled to a fairly rapid trial in most situations once the book of evidence has been assembled. But let's take the other scenario then, where the judges in the British court are not happy with the assurances that may be offered by the United States, or if the United States fails to offer those assurances, what happens then?
Well, then Julian is free, at least inside the United Kingdom. If the courts reject the U.S. assurances, then there is no prospect for the U.S. to extradite him from the U.K. But as long as the case remains live in the United States, then anywhere else he goes, he will be liable to arrest and extradition. So really, the solution for this situation is, of course, that the U.S. Drop the case. And this is something that President Biden should have done from day one. It's the Trump administration's legacy, and it is something that puts journalists all over the world at risk, and also the First Amendment in the United States.
Now, the question of were he to just throw in the towel, accept extradition to the United States based on assurances that he would not get the death penalty, and a further assurance that he could serve out his jail sentence in Australia, is that something that is even a possibility? Because that has been promised in the United States. And of course, once in Australia, the Australian government could take quite a benign view of his situation and give him kind of a conditional release.
Well, look, as I said, I don't take any U.S. promise seriously, because there's reports that they've plotted to kidnap and assassinate Julian. But let's say, as a thought experiment, serving out a sentence would only be post-conviction. So if Julian wanted to appeal a sentence, then that could take years, and the whole time he would be in conditions of extreme isolation. It's considered a national security case because he is indicted under the Espionage Act, so he would be in solitary confinement. And look, this is the country that not only has charged him with these outrageous charges under the Espionage Act and has plotted to assassinate him, but they know that isolation would drive him to commit suicide. He's in isolated conditions in Belmarsh, but at least he can call me throughout the day. He can receive visits twice a week or so. He can see his lawyers. That would not be the case in the United States. He would be in a hellhole, and he simply wouldn't be able to survive it. He's already in a very difficult, deteriorated state, physically and also mentally, of course. He's endured so much, and the extradition itself would kill him. So it's not realistic to think he would survive if he is extradited and be able to endure, you know, that kind of treatment.
Now, I mentioned that you two started a family. You've got boys, Max and Gabriel. While he was living within the Ecuadorian embassy, and of course you got married, family life must be extremely challenging. I don't know what the boys are told or what they make of their dad. Do they get to visit him? And if so, in what circumstances?
Well, all their memories of their father are from the prison. Our little one was born just a few weeks before he was arrested, and contact inside the embassy was extremely limited. And of course, we were extremely careful because there was such extraordinary surveillance and spying inside the embassy. In the prison, we visit about once. Well, I visit twice a week, but on the weekends, I bring the children. And we spend about an hour and a half together with him, and he reads them stories, and we sit and chat. And they speak to him every day over the phone and tell him about their day at school and so on. So they miss their father, and they're constantly trying to think of new ways how to break him out of prison, getting a singer to break the windows with her voice and so on. So, you know, they know that their father shouldn't be in prison, and that there are a lot of people around the world who are fighting to free him.
Yeah. And that narrative that you have to construct for your children, which has to be age appropriate.
That's right. I mean, when they were smaller, I didn't explain that we were going into a prison to visit their father. I also didn't call it Daddy's house. I made it clear that this wasn't Daddy's house, that our house is Daddy's house, but he's being kept in a different building. And then eventually they understood what a prison was because, you know, there are lots of cultural references out there, even for children, about prisons. And the older one, Gabriel, asked me, is Daddy in a prison? And I said, yes, he's in a prison, but he shouldn't be there, and so on. And, you know, they understand a lot. They also have to live through the experience of going through all the security checks and you know, seeing their father not being able to, for example, just get up and walk and buy them sweets from the tuck shop inside the visiting room. He's not allowed to do that. So all of these things they see with their own eyes. So there comes a point where there are some things I have to explain the bigger picture, but they also understand the reality of the prison and what it's doing to their father.
Stella, just going back to the very beginning and the WikiLeaks leaks, as it were. Julian, obviously, as a publisher, is deemed responsible for those leaks at whatever cost to WikiLeaks and to himself. But there were others involved in this whole process. Are you dismayed, disappointed that maybe others who were involved in all of this have not been charged?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer because, of course, if Julian is charged, then all the others should be as well. But the correct position, of course, is that Julian should not be charged. And I think the fact that Julian has been charged has made other journalists and publishers who are working on these publications rather cowardly. They should have defended Julian from day one, but I think rather than show courage and principle, they've been too quiet. And although we have, of course, all the main publications saying Julian shouldn't be extradited and the case should be dropped, the correct thing would have been to campaign for his release from day one and to demand a stop to their harassment. And ultimately, the fact that Julian is in prison, quite frankly, is because they showed cowardice and were very self-interested and perhaps valued their invites to, you know, to parties,
high places,
rather than the release of a fellow journalist. And I mean, of course, there are journalists in prison all over the world, and sometimes they're more vocal about those prisoners than someone that, like Julian, who they worked with and is very close to home.
Do you believe that when the case, if it should go to America and it is heard, I mean, the American courts, I don't know, given it's the Espionage Act, would it be a closed court or would there be full transparency? Because, you know, part of the argument at the time was these leaks put people's lives in danger, and that would presumably have to be shown to be true to merit a conviction.
Right. And actually, during the extradition hearings, the statements under oath by the U.S. prosecutors have stated that they don't have any evidence of a person being harmed as a result of the publications. But they say that just the risk that someone might have been harmed is sufficient. So, you know, they play these games. It may well be that part of a hearing would be behind closed doors. It's a national security case, so that means that the prosecutors have a lot of berth in order to make these kinds of statements and hide the proceedings from public view. But look, the whole indictment is a setup because he is being accused of doing what journalists do every day, of receiving information from Chelsea Manning, possessing it and making it public, and that is described as a criminal conspiracy and criminal act. I don't think there's a good chance of Julian winning in the United States. That's yeah. part of the problem.
But it's funny, when you look at what President Trump is able to do with his resources, turning somersaults in courts, turning justice on its head for his own ends. If you've got the resources, and I don't know whether you will have the resources to fight this case, it's extraordinary what happens in American courtrooms.
Well, it's a political case, and Julian's case, I mean, and Julian has been, you know, attacked publicly by public officials, by the media, and so on. But even in the UK, the way the case has proceeded is simply extraordinary. I mean, bringing it back to the decision last week, no one anticipated that this is the way the courts would rule, basically saying, yes, there should be an appeal, but we're going to give you a chance to amend your argument so that you have a better chance. I mean, why? Why is that the case? Can't they just let him go and just allow him to win on the basis of the arguments that they have before them?
Instead of looking for more arguments.
Exactly.
Finally, Stella, I have to ask you, how are you coping? I mean, I know you went into this, into your family, starting with Julian and your marriage and all that, eyes wide open, but still, it must be very difficult.
Well, what's difficult is to see Julian suffer and to see this injustice unfold. And I don't need any further motivation to do what I'm doing. I just want Julian home, and the injustice of it all makes me angry, and I just can't remain silent. So, our children need their father, and they need him home, not in a month or a year, but they need him now. So it's urgent, and Julian needs to be freed.
Stella Assange, wife of Julian Assange, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much, Pat.
Now, some breaking news from Helsinki. A 12-year-old child shot and wounded three other 12-year-olds at a school in Finland. The suspect was then taken peacefully into custody, according to the police. The victims were taken to hospital. At the school, a building has been cordoned off by police, and the parents are picking up their children from another school building hundreds of metres away. The suspect and the weapon are now in police custody. No details yet about the identities of the children or the condition in which the wounded are, but they are currently in hospital. Some of the comments on Julian Assange. What's the difference between totalitarian Russia and totalitarian USA, land of the free? Ha ha ha. Assange, all of this came from the Hillary email scandal because Hillary Clinton's emails were hacked and then published by Assange. Don't expect any mercy from the Clinton-Obama duo. Surely some other country might give him asylum. North Korea, perhaps. I'm not joking. Ireland, why not? He's held in high esteem in this country. The incarceration of Julian Assange is an affront to democracy. The US is further exposing itself as an all-imposing imperialist force that wants to control, either financially or militarily, everything that happens on a world scale. That's from Ed in Cork. But this one says, I've absolutely no sympathy for Assange. He put the lives of agents and informants at risk with his reckless dumping of classified information into the public domain.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.